The content found on thebestdayever.com from David Wolf and New Horizon Health, Inc. is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as treatment cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be construed as such because that would be illegal. Always work with a qualified health professional before making any changes to your diet, supplement use, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. Please understand that you assume all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.
Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Lucian Gauthier, and I am here with Daniel Vitalis from his home state of Maine. Daniel is here today to talk to us about the upcoming Longevity Now conference, his presentation, also a very special workshop that we're going to be holding after the Longevity Now conference, the Monday after, May 21st. That's the Master's Workshop Survival Program. So, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking with us.
As always, it's really nice to be here with you, Luke.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I always enjoy our conversations, Daniel, as well. I really, truly enjoy your presentations at our Longevity Now conference, as does everybody else. You know, people have really strong reactions to some of the stuff that you've been presenting over the years. You seem to sort of be like the bad boy of health. And what kind of information are you going to be bringing to us this upcoming conference, which is going to be Friday, May 18th to Sunday, May 20th? I know your presentations always kind of like have a really cool angle that make people think and stop and kind of, you know, take a look at their environment or their life or what's going on around them and really try to reconnect to a deeper truth, a deeper sense of connection to nature.
Well, yeah, one of the things that's important to me is that I don't really want to go down in history as somebody who just kept telling people to eat this food or that food or gave people little quick band-aid fixes to things. I'm trying to talk about a bigger picture thing. So this year, what I'm going to be talking about, my talk is called Rewild Your Mind. And the idea is really about developing your innate capability, because it's my belief that we have greater capability than what we're actually accessing. But our domestication is so broad sweeping. I mean, so many aspects of our lives have been so altered from what is natural to us. A lot of our innate capabilities have been suppressed and repressed and, bred out of us. So I'm going to be talking about a theme. I guess it's a theme that I've really been talking about for a few years now, but it's really come into focus. And that's this idea of rewilding. And, I'm going to be talking about human beings as a couple of discrete breeds, a couple different breeds of human beings. You know, this idea of Homo sapien as being sort of all human beings, I think, is inaccurate. So I'm going to be presenting the idea that we may actually not be Homo sapien anymore. I'm going to be talking about the background again of our food and sort of where it comes from, and then I'm going to be going into rewilding and how we can actually rewild ourselves to gain back some of our innate capabilities, maybe see some of the sort of superpowers that are buried deep within us. You know, how do we uncover that? And what are the kind of things that we can incorporate into our lifestyles to really begin rewilding and find out what we're really made of?
That's fascinating, Daniel. And I know a lot of people have been talking about this subject because things are changing at such an alarming rate that evolution seems to be happening. It seems like we're sort of compacting many hundreds of years worth of evolution into maybe 5, 10, 20 years because of the pace of the change. What are your thoughts on the pace of the changes that we're seeing?
Well, there's the pace of the change. There's a couple of things going on. One is our technology is changing our environment rapidly. Another one is that our environment just seems to be changing really rapidly. Another one is that we have unlocked a lot of the secrets of genetics in the last couple of decades. And so, I mean, I don't think the average person really understands the degree to which we're altering the genetics of species and actually introducing those species into wild environments. So the genetic engineers have been hard at work. And prior to that, the breeders have been hard at work. So we know a lot about how to change a species. When you look at domestication, what you're looking at is compacted evolution. So the fact that we can breed a plant or breed an animal to specifications means that we can compact evolution. So that's all starting to turn on us. So we've been breeding organisms and farming them. We've been genetically engineering organisms and farming them. And now we are just reaching that threshold where we start to do this to ourselves or see that we've been doing it to ourselves. So the concept that I'm really bringing is, hey, since all this is going on. How about we harness it and take control of it? If we know the factors that change us as a species, if we know the factors that affect our evolution, and those factors, by the way, are who we breed with, what we eat, what our environment's like, what information we put into our head, what behaviors we do each day. Those are the factors that cause what kind of breed we'll become. If we know that, why don't we then harness that, take advantage of that? It's like if you know that there's a big deficiency of magnesium going on, you might say, well, I'm going to make sure I eat foods that are rich in magnesium. If you know that people are domesticating themselves into literally into degeneration, it might make sense then to say, hey, I'm going to start bringing into my lifestyle these different factors and these different vectors that can affect how I develop and how my children develop so that we don't degenerate, but instead we become stronger. So I'm just going to be introducing ideas on how people can become stronger. I think things are speeding up so fast now and our environment's changing so fast. This idea of rewilding for me is about creating a lot of adaptability, because ultimately right now we have to be as adaptable as possible, because it's very difficult to determine. I think it'd be very difficult to determine even what our world's going to look like in 5 years. It's very difficult now. Things are changing so rapidly, not just technologically, but environmentally. So our weather is changing. Our landscapes are changing. Our wild environments are changing. The whole technosphere and new sphere and internet is changing. The way we interface with each other is changing. I mean, the idea of social networking didn't exist just a few years back. Who could have foreseen this? So things are changing so rapidly. We got to stay really adaptable. And you see it with a lot of older people who can't quite catch on today to the changes. So they're being sort of left behind. And so I feel that there's a lot of chances now to get left behind. But unfortunately, that doesn't just mean technologically. That could mean actually losing your ability to even interface with this planet, because it's changing, the environment's changing. So the idea is total adaptability, staying totally responsive, and having access to the things that can make your body stronger, the behaviors that can make your body stronger, the environmental factors, the foods that can make your body stronger, so that you can sustain this change. Because I don't think everybody on the planet today is going to be represented in the gene pool in the coming decade.
It's such an interesting topic. And this morning when I woke up, Daniel, there was an article written by someone who had posted related to the FDA's decision to strike over 900,000 signatures on the genetic food modification label proposal that's been kind of kicked around for a while. And that was a real shocker that came this morning.
I think we would, I mean, I would love to see a label on genetically modified foods. So I want to be clear about that. I would love to see genetically modified foods halted, at least until we see some real research. And I think once we saw that research, we would probably move to ban these things. But I also understand that, and I think it's kind of clear that this juggernaut's going to keep moving forward. So the chances of us making a strong, like the chances of us stopping genetic modification are pretty slim. I think that it's going to continue to move forward. The chances of us getting labeling in the near future, geez, that's a tough call, but I don't expect we would, because it's the ignorance of the consumer that's driving this thing. If people were aware of it, I think we would, you know, once they'd move towards labels, then people are going to start to say, well, hey, what do these foods do? Why do we have to label them? What do they do? And if we looked and we saw that genetically modified foods tend to cause, at least all the preliminary research shows that they tend to cause damage to kidneys, damage to liver, and damage to reproductive systems. People knew that. I don't think they'd eat these foods. And so these megacorps, what they really rely on are people not knowing. And so they're going to do anything they can to keep moving this stuff forward. And, you know, we keep seeing these reports like genetically modified mosquitoes released into the wild environments of Florida. We see, we're seeing stuff like that now. And what that means is wild lands, or once wild lands, now have genetically modified organisms, not only breeding with each other in those wild ecosystems, but breeding with the existing populations as well. So we're moving into this phase in history. And, you know, also all these genetically modified crops that are out there are escaping their domestication to some degree. So we know that we're moving into an era where there won't be a clear line of delineation between what's natural and what's been modified. It's not going to be so clear anymore. I think we kind of need to accept that. I think we might have come too far. And I would pose the question to people out there. To these are the things you know are going on. These are the things that you have, you know, there's public record, there's access to. What's not being reported? To what degree have we actually modified our own genetics? What's actually going on? We don't really know, but I would suggest that it's probably gone a lot farther than a lot of us even would want to imagine. So, you know, it's a brave new world. And really, what can we do? We got to stay strong. We got to stay healthy. We got to make sure that we have strong reproductive capabilities. We have strong endocrine capabilities. We have strong immune system capabilities. And as you hinted about the master's workshop, making sure that we have put things in place to make sure we can sustain ourselves on this planet for a while longer.
And Daniel, speaking of the master's workshop, let's talk a little bit about what you're going to be presenting there, because this is a very special workshop. Well, the Longevity Now conference that's happening this spring, this conference is not going to be streamed live via webcast. The conference, May 18th to May 20th in Costa Mesa, California, will not be streamed live via web. This is something that is only for participants who are attending the event, and also the Master's Survival Program, the Master's Workshop. And I think when most people think about a sort of a survival program, think about, you know, a guy in camouflage on his hands and knees crawling through the woods and dirt and leaves. But that's not what this program is about. Let's talk a little bit about what you're going to be focusing on.
All right. Yeah. Well, all right. For me, there's a real obvious progression here for, I think, for most of us. It's like, if you start to take care of your health, we were raised in a culture where, our lives were almost worthless. I mean, that's really how our culture raises us. So they abuse us from the moment we're born, throw us out onto the worst, spit us out onto the workforce. We work, we labor for very little reward. And then typically die sick somewhere with the last of our dollars being extracted. That's the program our society's offered us. So those of us who start to take care of our health, we start having this massive awakening. I mean, I think that's what really characterizes the listeners out there right now, is that they've had a big awakening. They've woken up to something. And once you wake up to the fact that you are in control of your health and you're in control of your quality of life and therefore your quality of mind, your quality of mood, your quality of experience, when you wake up to that, you start realizing, whoa, I need to make sure I can preserve this, because this feels good. I like feeling good. I like feeling healthy. I like having strong immunity. I like being attractive. I like having a glow about me. And I want to maintain that. And the world around me is looking more and more uncertain. So a lot of us wake up to that and we start thinking about, how do we make sure we can preserve our quality of life? What's the point of being really healthy if we are not putting things in place to preserve our quality of life? So another interesting thing about our culture today is it doesn't prepare for any inevitability, or what I like to say, a contingency. We don't plan for contingencies anymore. So your grandmother did, right? She had a pantry. She'd store up food about a year's worth, make sure that she always had that stuff on hand, make sure they had supplies on hand in case there was ever any break to the supply chain. So we live in a world now where we have a very delicate, massive infrastructure, our supply chain, that supplies all of our foods to us and all of our goods to us. And it's very fragile. It's very delicate. And it's poised to break down. And just in the last year to 2 years, our own government's been throwing around terms like martial law, terms like economic breakdown or economic collapse. They've been talking about these things and instability in our government, instability in our economic system, and all of those things equal instability in our supply chain. So what I'm going to be talking about is not how do we make fires, not how do we camouflage ourselves and hide in the woods. And those are all fun things. I really enjoy that kind of thing. But what I'm going to be talking about is how to set up a life where you have planned for basic contingencies, just making sure you have some food on hand, making sure you have some supplies on hand, and making it part of your lifestyle, your longevity strategy, because any longevity strategy is going to be incomplete if we haven't planned just a little bit in advance. What if you live in an area prone to tornadoes? What if you live in an area prone to hurricanes? What if you live in an area prone to drought? Well, you'd want to structure your longevity strategy around that just a bit, so that you had things on hand in case there was ever a breakdown in your supply chain. Keep in mind that your Whole Foods has about 3 days worth of food on the shelves at most. That means if there was even a temporary breakdown in shipping, in trucking, there'd be no food on the shelves in 3 days. Most people don't have 3 days worth of food in their house. It's really sad. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about foods that are really storable. We're going to talk about items that are tradable or barterable in a situation where dollars don't have the luster that they have today. And, you know, a few years ago, this was really fringe stuff to talk about. But in the last few years, it's become apparent that our dollar is no longer stable or as stable as it was. That our fuel supply is not as stable as it was. I mean, what's fueling our vehicles right now, except the war machine in the Middle East, right? That's what's bringing us the petrol that's fueling our supply chain. We're seeing now that this thing can't last, that it's unsustainable. So if we plan to be on the planet for a long time, if we're into longevity, I think we should plan a little bit ahead and make sure that we're able to take care of ourselves in a short-term kind of emergency situation or contingency. And keep in mind that even FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, they tell us to have at least a 3-day set of supplies on hand. So my question to the audience is, do you have 3 days worth of stuff? Do you have 7 days worth of stuff? How about a few months worth of stuff so that you're prepared to continue living your healthy lifestyle if there's a temporary breakdown in your supply chain or in your economic system or any other kind of breakdown that could happen from natural or man-made disasters? Keep in mind that things like Fukushima can happen here too. What struck Japan last year, that could happen where I live. That could happen where you live. We were really blessed here in the United States to be on the safer end of that tragedy. But for those people in Japan who experienced that, I bet a little preparation beforehand would have been mightily welcome once that happens. So I'm just going to be talking about how we can create some security to protect our longevity lifestyle.
Daniel, that's a fantastic explanation. I really like what you said about making it specific to the environment that you live in. I recently moved from Wisconsin down here to Phoenix, which is the desert type of climate. And the first thing that happened to me is I ran out of spring water. And I immediately looked at the tap and I said, that's not an option. That going to the tap for my water isn't an option. So I had to actually get a larger vehicle, organize a trip to Sedona, get my spring water and come back. And then the realization I had was always to have at least 5 to 10 gallons of extra spring water on hand, no matter what. And when I reach that threshold, then it's time to go back and refill.
You know, this is a really good point because I've got a vehicle right now out in Arizona that I left there. I wintered in Sedona. So I've got a vehicle there, which I'm using as a cache. And what that means is my vehicle's there, but it's also loaded up with everything that I would need when I arrived there. So there's 10 gallons of water in that vehicle. There's a full tank of petrol. There's a big sack of wild rice. Lots of different gear and equipment and food and supplies so that when I arrive in Arizona in just a few weeks, I'll have everything I need waiting for me there, no matter what situation I arrive to. Now, what I need when I'm there is drastically and dramatically different than what I need up here in Maine. The winters here are several feet of snow. They're very cold. Obviously it's different in Arizona. I need a completely, I go through 3 times as much water when I'm there. And I'm sure you're experiencing that now. Mm-hmm. Whatever you were drinking in Wisconsin, triple it just to stay, remotely hydrated in Phoenix. Yep. So we need to tailor things to ourselves. What kind of issues would Phoenix, face in a grid down situation? In other words, if there was some temporary loss of power or if there was some civil unrest or if there was even a banking holiday, what would you face there? Well, water would be your major issue and staying cool. The opposite's true up here. I mean, in Maine, it's not going to be a water issue for me. Staying warm would be an issue. So I prepare a little bit my home here differently than I do when I'm in Arizona. And I think everybody should look at where they are. And we're going to talk about that in the Master's Workshop. You know, how do we prepare for likely contingencies? There are those out there in the survival community and in the prepper community who are preparing for things that I'm not very concerned about, right? So I'm not preparing for an EMP blast. I'm not preparing for an invasion from China or an invasion from aliens. I'm preparing for what kind of natural disasters might happen here. And what would this area that I'm in look like if there was a temporary civil unrest? You know, like I mentioned before, our own government's been throwing around this idea of civil unrest, and they've been making more and more preparations for situations like that. And I think we should maybe take that as an indicator that that's a concern that our government's having. It should be at least on our radar. If there was civil unrest where you live and you live in a city, that's very different than if you live in the countryside. So we'll just be talking about how can you prepare and how can you do it safely? How can you do it in a way that's fun? Because we don't want to make this thing scary or uncomfortable, and we don't want to have to change our lifestyle in order to do this. We're not talking about going into an underground bunker. We're talking about how do I put things in place to preserve my current quality of life. I think that's really important because we don't want this to be scary. We don't want this to be massively expensive. We're not looking to build a compound. We're just looking to make sure we have some superfoods on hand. Make sure we have water on hand. Make sure that we have salt on hand. Make sure that we have the medicines that we need for our body on hand. Those kind of things so that we're not having to be concerned about running out of things, that there's a temporary shortage.
Okay, fantastic. And for those of you who've just joined us, again, the Longevity Now conference is this May 18th, Friday, to Sunday, May 20th, 2012, at the Orange County Hilton in Costa Mesa, California, where we always hold our events now. The ticket price is currently $297. It will be going up. The Master's Workshop Survival Program is now only $99 until May 4th, and then it goes up to $147. And once again, this event, both the Longevity Now Conference and the Master's Workshop Survival Program, will not be streamed live via the internet. This is a live event only. Daniel, just as a wrap-up, I know when every time you come to the Longevity Now Conference and you do your presentation, you know, that weekend, It's such a high energy experience for the crowd. I know it's a high energy experience for you. Could you just share a little bit with our listeners what it's like to participate in an event where over 1,300 people get together and really focus on some of the most cutting edge health modalities?
All right. Well, for me, the experience of the Longevity Now conference, the last, I don't know, five times that I've been there has the energy of, say, a concert where you have all of these people focusing their energy in one place. But the difference is between, say, a festival or a concert or some kind of big event like that is that there's a real specific goal and intention with this event. So what happens is, you know, normally what you have is you have, say, your rockers up on the stage and the whole crowd is throwing energy up onto the stage at these people. And what they do with that energy is they turn around and they, you know, play guitar and they play drums and out and up. And that's exciting and it's fun for everybody. But there's not a lot that you take away with you. What happens here is you've got 1,300 people focusing that energy up on the speaker, and the speaker's using that energy to transmit their very best material back to the crowd, and the crowd's receiving some of the most cutting edge material, health material that exists today. Eating really good food, they're getting to shop all the really cool vendors that are there, and they're hearing some amazing information that's really inspiring them. So it's pretty exciting to get to feel that high and get to watch that high and get to ride on that really natural, uplifted, serotonin rich experience. And like I said, to walk away with a lot of new information, which is not something you get at a concert, not something you get at a festival. That's what's really special about it, is education mixed with high energy, excitement.
Thank you so much, Daniel. As always, you've given us some really unique perspectives on health, genetics, adaptation, and a lot of great stuff coming at the Longevity Now conference, May 18th to the 20th. 2012 at the Orange County Hilton in Costa Mesa, California. This is where we will be doing our 10th Longevity Now conference. So this is a real special event for us. This is such a special event. We're not going to be streaming it on the web. This is for live participants only. So get your ticket now. Visit www.thelongevitynowconference.com. We've got an incredible lineup of speakers with David Wolfe, Dr. Joel Furman. We've got a very special guest, Michael Beckwith, who you might have seen on The Secret. We've got Dr. Robert Marshall, Ron Teagarden is making an appearance once again, Truth Calkins, and you guessed it, Daniel Vitalis, as well as many others. So don't miss this epic 10th Longevity Now conference. Get your tickets now at thelongevitynowconference.com. Also, the Master's Workshop Survival Program, Sir Thriving in 2012. This is the Monday after the event, Monday, May 21st. It goes from 10:30 in the morning till 5 at night. This is really one of our phenomenal breakout kind of programs that we do after the event is over, where we really have an intimate group of people. We focus on certain aspects of health, and this is really where we get some intimate one-on-one time with some of the masters of health. So this is another great opportunity to take advantage of. So thank you so much, Daniel.
Thanks. I'm really excited to get out there, and I'm excited to share some of this new information with people. I think it's going to be really valuable to everybody who's there.